You're listening to Radio Albion.
Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to the first episode of Patriotic Weekly Review in 2020. And hopefully it is going to be a very, very big year for us. Now, we do have some things to discuss before the show gets underway. However, the first thing I want to do is wish you all, or not wish you all, but say I hope you all had a really, really great Christmas. Now, we've got a fantastic lineup of guests going into 2020. And obviously the first guest we have is Richard Spencer, who is here today, and we're going to get over to him soon. People don't like long intros, but we do have something to discuss before we get into the intro, before we get into the show or the main show today. Now, if you want to contribute to the show, the best way to do so is using Entropy. You can ask questions and you can make financial contributions to the show. The link is there. It is in the chat. The link is also on my Twitter, and the link is also on Telegram and in the show description beneath the show. Now, that is Entropy. You can ask questions, make financial contributions. You can also make financial contributions via Bitcoin or by writing to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you can't use Entropy or Bitcoin. Now, let's get on to a little bit of unfortunate business that happened at the end of last year, which I want to discuss and I want to put paid to straight away because trolls are sort of loving this. Now, at the end of last year, someone calling themselves, I'm not going to give out their name, somebody wrote to me and said that they were a transsexual and they agreed with a large number of the policies that we put forward. However, they wanted to put a case to people on this show. Now, I asked people if they wanted this individual to come on the show. If people wanted this individual to come on this show and discuss issues, have questions asked to them, and have questions asked of them by members of the panel. I did not say that this was now, you know, an LGBT-friendly show. I did not say that we were selling out. I didn't say all of these things that people are ascribing to me. I said to the audience, do people want this individual to appear on the show? Now, if the answer is yes, people can have the person on the show. And if the answer is no, they're not going to come on the show. It's as simple as that. However, mischaracterizing me asking the audience if they want to hear from someone is absolutely ridiculous. This show's always had a range of different guests. Sometimes guests have ended up having more of a debate with us. Sometimes guests have agreed with us. Sometimes people complain that we spend apparently 2 hours just going around in a circle agreeing with one another. And then when somebody wants to come on who wants to sort of bring a different perspective, people lose their minds as well. So it was a quite simple question. Did people want this person to come on the show? And if they say no, they don't want that person on the show, they will not come on the show. It's as simple as that. You know, you guys are part of the community. The show isn't just all about me. If you want a particular guest, I always take that on board and have that guest on. Sometimes that works out for the better. Sometimes it doesn't. You know, we've had some very entertaining shows and we've had some rather awkward ones thanks to guest suggestions from the audience. So as I said, this was not an attempt by me to integrate people into the movement. It wasn't an attempt by me to sell out or do anything nefarious. It was a simple question to the audience that certain people have felt to either clip out or disingenuously misquote me in order to cause trouble. Now, I think that has been dealt with. If anyone has any other issues, if anyone has any other issues about that, they can write to me. Okay. And at some point, we're going to deal with this quite simply because we'll put up a poll on Telegram saying to people who watch the show, the community on Telegram, would they like this guest or not? And people will vote yes or no. It'll be a simple yes or no thing. But just because we have certain guests on the show doesn't mean we endorse everything they stand for. You know, that's a very clear point that we always make. Now, putting that to one side, I hope everyone had a great Christmas, not least the three wonderful people I had with me today. We're just going to go around the group very quickly. Jason, did you have a good Christmas and what did you get up to?
Spectacular. Everything is magnificent. Thank you all for being here with us. Great to see Richard again, Dr. Patrick Slattery, and of course, the great Mark Collette. Happy New Year. Happy New Decade to everyone. We have Go Free just today now is available on Kindle for $2.99 for the first 299 downloads. Get yours while it lasts. And maybe around 10 minutes after the show today, we are going to run a Luke Mason's third piece from his musical telling of my book, Prometheus Rising. It is truly magnificent. Probably, as I say, about 10 minutes after we wrap up here today. But again, Happy New Year, Happy New Decade, and I'll pass it back.
Patrick, did you have a good Christmas and New Year, my friend? Tell us a little bit about it before we go over to Richard.
Yes. I made a New Year's resolution, and my New Year's resolution is to have a 2020 be a non-kosher certified year. And to that end, I am going to double up on my shilling for the Kosher-tified app. Kosher-tified app. You can download it from nationalbugle.com, and you too can have a non-kosher certified 2020.
Excellent. Well, that was all done very swiftly, so we can get straight over to our main guest, the first guest of the year and a recurring guest that people usually really like, although there has been some discontent in the chat tonight about you being here, Rich, and there's already lots of questions piling up for you. It's going to be a very interesting show. Now, before we start, I just want to say, I really enjoy having Richard on. I've always really enjoyed having Richard on. I think Richard's been a great voice for the movement. He's done some controversial stuff, but usually when he does something, it is at the very least entertaining. And the shows that he's contributed to in the past have been very entertaining shows that have been watched by an awful lot of people. And the fact that we've already got over 1,000 viewers tonight and we're less than 10 minutes into the show says that plenty of people do actually want to hear what Richard Spencer has to say. And I do as well. That's why I invited him on. And I think this is a great start to the new year. So, Richard, my friend, tell us what you've been up to over Christmas and the new year, and tell us of your plans for 2020.
Sure. Yes. Thanks for having me on. Yes, I do have my detractors. I think that I separate the wheat from the chaff, to be honest. So I think it's a good thing. But yes, I had a great Christmas. We did a lot. I was with my kids the whole time. And we did lots of presents. We went sledding. We went skiing. My daughter actually skied a blue, which is pretty amazing, knowing her age. So I just had a great, relaxed Christmas. New Year's last night was quite relaxed. I'm sure all you amateurs were out, you know, getting drunk and failing to get laid and all that kind of stuff. But I had a quiet night at home. I actually worked on a book that I'm going to publish. I think I'm going to set the release date on February 1st, but it will be available before then by Edward Dutton on Islam. And it reaches, I think, some of the conclusions you would expect and reaches many conclusions that you would not expect as well about Islam. It's why Islam makes you stupid, but also means you'll conquer the world. And as we know, conquering the world is a lot more important than being smart. So.
Well, Richard, you started that really well. The stuff about the skiing was good.
But oh, you don't like any phrases
into territory that will no doubt enrage people, upset people quite a bit. So you've kind of you sort of got in the door, didn't you, before rolling in the hand grenade. That's the quite an interesting tactic there. Mm-hmm. But 2020 is obviously going to be a big year for politics, not just in the UK, right, but also in America. Now, obviously, we've got the Democratic primaries going on right now. There's quite a lot of controversy about all of that and who's actually going to win. People are even talking about potentially Hillary Clinton coming back and, you know, taking over the reins, because at the moment, the Democratic primaries seem to be in total chaos. There isn't really a front runner. And probably the most notable candidate is Joe Biden, who isn't particularly popular. Now, obviously, Trump will be going up against the winner of the Democratic primaries. Now, I don't think it's unfair to say that your initial rise to sort of stardom, so to speak, was very much linked to Donald Trump's election. And really the events that, you know, the events that went after the election of Donald Trump, when there was the infamous speech that you made at the MPI conference. Now, let's talk a little bit about this before. I mean, there are obviously a lot of questions from the audience already, but let's start a little bit like, you know, on the Donald Trump issue. Obviously, you were a central figure to what was then known as the alt-right, and the alt-right was the hot thing 4 years ago. It was the thing everyone was talking about. It was a thing that everyone wanted to be a part of. That now has fallen a little by the wayside. It seems to have sort of disappeared to a large degree. But the alt-right was kind of built in many ways on sort of a loose support for Donald Trump, sort of internet activism in support of Donald Trump and in support of Donald Trump's anti-immigration sort of build the wall policies. Now, coming up to Trump's re-election campaign, how do you think yourself and what is left of the alt-right movement, or, you know, the dissident right in America, will be standing on the issue of Trump? And do you think Trump will be a unifier again in 2020? Or do you think he will sort of lack the online support he had in 2016?
Well, I will not be supporting that man. Fail Trump, fail our people. What was the last one? Total failure. That's probably the chant that I would give to Donald Trump. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there. That's a big question you just asked. Look, I have been in this movement for a long time. I have, you know, put my nose to the grindstone and published numerous books, published hundreds, maybe thousands of articles and blogs and tweets and podcasts and so on. And we were always a truly dissident movement in the sense that we were questioning the premises of the system, questioning the premises of both parties. I have attacked Republicans far, far more often than I've attacked Democrats. Indeed, you know, attacking Democrats strikes me as, you know, not even low-hanging fruit. It's like a fruit lying on the ground that you pick up. It's just meaningless, to be honest. That's what we did. Trump came in as, in the words of Jeb Bush, the chaos candidate. And there was something deeply attractive about it. He was the big middle finger to the system or the world or so on. I know in Britain you have different hand gestures, but you know, go with me on this one. And we were all attracted to it. There was a alt-right writ large that included a number of different people. I was willing, just because I was there at the origin of the term, back in like 2008, 2009, I was willing to fight for the term. And I obviously want to push the term in serious radical directions. You know, other people don't want to go, but yeah, I think it was an amazing period. I look back on it with a certain fondness, and in terms of just where the rubber hits the road, I would say unequivocally that Trump could not have won without the alt-right writ large. Now, that doesn't just mean me or something like that. Perhaps I could have been taken out of the equation. He would have done it. But it means the alt-right writ large, in the sense that there was a perception of his campaign as revolutionary, to say the least, and for good reason. Even his speeches at the RNC, the RNC, the Republican National Convention, when he won over the GOP establishment, were actually radical and were taking the meaning of conservatism or the right in a new direction, genuinely. Not exactly the direction I would take it, but kind of pointing in that direction. I don't think that he could have won without the energy online, without the meme energy, without this kind of unquantifiable passion that surrounded his campaign. And that's something you can't measure, but it's something you need. And Hillary Clinton didn't have it. Hillary Clinton, she already had a lot of dissent and angst and disappointment and even rage within her ranks with the Bernie people, who basically felt that Bernie got screwed and then were understandably extremely disappointed in Bernie for just kind of giving in and endorsing her. But generally speaking, her events were a bunch of old people, you know, vaguely clapping. And Trump events were wild and crazy. The people online were wild and crazy. And against all the direction that the alt-right has taken, I mean, the alt-right still exists. It's still the same people. They just kind of come up with a new term every 3 months and come up with a new strategy every 3 months or whatever. And against, you know, their current, you know, movement, being really radical was absolutely necessary for a candidate like Trump to win. So we played an indispensable part in that. And I'm not just saying that to blow smoke. So I think where we are now, things like the GOP or conservatism, Inc., or whatever you want to call it, they're not exactly monolithic. They certainly are top-down driven. They have billionaire donors. They have people, you know, the directors who are telling the actors where to go, so to speak. But they're not exactly monolithic. And I think there is an impetus, and there are people within Conservatism Inc. who want the alt-right back. And they want that wild Dionysian energy back for Trump. And they correctly perceive that Trump can't win without it. And I would push back a little bit against the way you set up this question in the sense of the Democrats are in disarray. I actually don't think it's that bad. Biden is, yeah, the guy's, he's always been a blowhard, arrogant fool. I mean, but his support is remarkably consistent. He peaked right before he announced. It has never gone down. It's never gone down when his eyes have literally bled on national television, when his dentures have fallen out, when he sounded like, you know, your jolly old grandpa in the retirement home. His support does not waver. So the Democratic field is fairly strong. Bernie is strong. He has a little bit of a bigger and different coalition than he did a few years ago. I actually predict that Bernie will win Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada. I think Biden will win the Super Tuesday elections in South Carolina and stuff like that. So I think it's going to be a contested race, but I don't think it's by any means in disarray. And either of those two candidates, Biden or Bernie, I think would pretty easily defeat Trump. Now, Trump's only hope is to basically do what he did last time. That is an electoral college strategy where he's not winning the majority of the vote. And he's even going to probably lose a lot of the white vote. I actually wrote an article recently about whites moving away from the GOP, which is a very clear trend. kind of undeniable trend that, of course, no one in our movement is willing to talk about. Except me, but I think Trump will be easily defeated by either Bernie or Biden. But the wild card that he can play to win this thing is to kind of generate that wild energy of 2016. And for me, it feels like it's January 1st, and there was some wild New Year's party last night, and we're all mixing a little you know, whiskey in our coffee, to a hair of the dog that bit us. We're trying to revive something, a moment that has passed and that is over. And we're all hungover, but we're, you know, spiking our drinks in order to get that good old feeling back. I don't have it. I think it's not simply a case that Trump has failed to reform immigration or build the wall, et cetera. I think it's actually much deeper than that. Trump is an example of fake politics. We talk about fake news. That can mean a lot of different things. Trump is fake politics in the sense that he generates media outrage. He generates, you know, left-wing celebrities calling him Hitler, and he generates the Twitterati, you know, endlessly, self-righteously denouncing him. But he doesn't actually do anything. So it's a kind of virtual reality politics where we're fighting these, you know, massive battles that are ultimately meaningless and ultimately exist on cable news and social media. And so I'm not going to perpetuate this lie by pretending that Trump is anything other than he is. He is a showman, you know, to his dying day. Now, in terms of the generation of a neo-alt-right, I think we can see that taking place right now. The Graeper phenomenon, which I don't know if that's reached the UK, I presume it has to a certain degree, has been, you know, kids in Trump hats, you know, trolling Charlie Kirk, saying some outlandish stuff, talking about demographics as destiny or whatever. I don't know whether it will work. I don't find the neo-alt-right to be attractive in the slightest bit. I want to head off in a very different direction. But I think there will be, there is an understanding that that Dionysian energy that is online, that's anonymous, that's young, is a necessary, unquantifiable, but necessary component in this recipe for an election. And I think there will be an attempt to bring it about. There will be an attempt to bring back the old alt-right again. Well, I've seen this film. I don't want to rewind the video and imagine that it's going to end up at a new happy ending. I know how this movie ends, and I'm not going to take part in it. And I will do my small part to make sure that Donald Trump is not reelected. I want to end this fake politics bullshit. I want to bring in an era of real politics, and that is going to be very different than the kind of conservatism, the race baiting, the silliness, the kind of 4chan alt-right meme stuff. We just have to end this childish nonsense before we can actually do something serious. So to answer your question directly, yes, I think the alt-right will be unified to a degree. But I think it will be hollow because in 2015 to 2016, Trump was a potentiality. And so one can be forgiven for jumping on that bandwagon and getting excited about this. It's wild and crazy. We don't know where it's going to go, you know, that kind of thing. We now know where it's going to lead. And the idea of getting the band back together or something just strikes me as childish and wrong. And I won't have a part in it. So anyway, that's generally my answer to the question. But if I had to predict, I think there is a much better chance for Bernie to get the Democratic nomination than people give him credit for. I think he could easily beat Trump because he would hit Trump where it hurts. Bernie is most popular among, you know, the kind of normie population in exactly those states that Trump needs to win. Those Midwestern states that went for Obama, that traditionally go Democratic, but actually went for Trump in 2016. That's where Bernie has a base. That's where he outperformed polls. That's where he defeated Hillary Clinton in 2016. And if Bernie goes up against Trump and Bernie stays strong, he absolutely can win. And I think Biden, as just kind of, I don't know, pathetic as he is, he can do it. He can beat Trump. So I in a way hope he does. I think it's time for the kind of meme 4chan nonsense to end. It's time to grow up And 2016 was a lot of fun. I don't regret it. It was wild. We didn't know what was going to happen and so on. But, you know, time moves forward. It doesn't walk backwards. And we need to move forward too.
Patrick?
Sure. Yeah, I don't actually see the electoral landscape quite the same way. You know, Trump ran a very good 2016 campaign, and his number one issue was immigration. And, you know, I agree that I don't think Trump would have been elected had it not been for alt-right memeing and whatnot. His margin of victory was so narrow that pretty much as long as you say we had a positive effect, and that was an effect that put him over the goal line. A lot of people could say that. I think even Sean Hannity could make the same type of claim. And he had, to the extent that he enunciated it, and it wasn't at all clear, but to the extent he enunciated a foreign policy, for the most part, it was non-interventionist and commonsensical. And I don't think anybody should have any regrets having supported Trump. Trump has, I don't think Trump, I don't know about phony politics, fake politics. He's kind of a fake person. He's always been a fake person, which I think people knew about. Maybe we thought that he was would be a lot more sincere as president, but he has faced a kind of opposition, not just from across the aisle, so to speak, but from within his own party, from within his own cabinet, from within his own White House, from within his own family. He has faced a different kind of opposition from any other president before him. He doesn't have the skills. He has great campaigning skills. He doesn't have governing skills, and he's appointed himself an absolutely horrible administration. And you know, you can say it's his fault. And, you know, he picked these people, but that's, you know, he's got limited capacity. He's got limited abilities in terms of governing, and so he's losing. I don't think he was a shill from the start. I think he's been on a massive losing streak. I think he's afraid of losing an election and going to jail. He's pretty much a defeated character. In April, I endorsed Tulsi Gabbard for president, and not ironically. It's unironic. I think I look out there and I don't see any leader who is going to take us to the promised land, but politicians, whether they're Tulsi Gabbard or Donald Trump, their assets, their opportunities, and we have to make the most of what we can with them. And yeah. Tulsi Gabbard offers.
Let me jump in here. Mm-hmm. I really respect your endorsement of Tulsi, and I absolutely know it's not ironic or anything like that. And I would never do that. But yes, I would actually. I will vote for a Democrat, certainly in the primary. I'll probably vote for a Democrat in the election. Why am I doing this? Have I changed? Have I gone over to the Antifa side or whatever? No, of course not. My reasoning is this. I mean, look, I have big ideals that I've enunciated. I've learned that JF told me not to mention the word that I am associated with that starts with an E and ends with a state, that can actually get your video banned in some places. So I won't mention that. But yes, I think we should always, much like the left successfully did for 100 years, push towards a great, you could even say utopian ideal, that this is a motivating energy and that we shouldn't just simply be reactionaries. So I have those. But the question is, what is going to help, you know, suffering white people immediately? Is it more Republicans? I mean, absolutely not. And, you know, I think the Bernie platform, and Bernie has been actually in the past pretty decent on immigration, better than most Republicans. But a Bernie platform, Medicare for all, doing something about the opioid crisis, et cetera, this is just immediately better for suffering white people. and I would vote for him. Secondly, I respect anti-system candidates, people who know that there's something rotten in the state of Denmark and want to do something. Tulsi is absolutely hated by the establishment. Maybe not quite to the extent that Trump has been, because he had this, you know, white nationalist vibe or something. But she absolutely is hated because of her foreign policy views, first and foremost. She's an anti-system candidate. And I respect that and would support that and certainly vote for her. Her voting present at the impeachment hearing, I thought, was absolutely perfect. It's just an acknowledgement that, yeah, Trump has done something kind of wrong, but ultimately, who cares? That both sides are hysterical and histrionic. The American public has just checked out on impeachment, and so I'm just going to vote present and kind of not give in to either side. I think that was great. So I absolutely would support Tulsi. That's the way we should think. I hear all these kind of like armchair strategists, you know, in the on the alt-right Twitter, something like, we've got to win the working class, and this is how conservatives are going to win in the future, is getting working class more. And it's like, do we really, like, all of that is just rhetoric to trick more Midwestern white people into voting against their clear interest, you know, by voting for the Republican Party. And I don't know, I just that makes me feel dirty at some level, immoral at some level. If you want to help people immediately, vote for a real social Democrat like Bernie. I think in the terms of what could conceivably happen in the next, say, year or two, I think that's it. If you want to just perpetuate the status quo, yeah, go vote for a Republican. We won't go after the corporations. We'll maintain the wars abroad, maybe increase them a little bit here and there, nothing too much. And I'm just not going to do it. I just think we need to both kind of think bigger, which is very hard for people, but then sometimes we kind of have to think a little bit smaller and do something that's immediately effective for people. And this notion that we're, you know, a Democrat is going to be elected and we're all going to be expelled from social media. First off, that is happening anyway. That has happened to all of us to some degree. And it all happened under Trump, actually. It didn't happen under Barack Obama. And so this notion that, you know, if a Democrat gets elected, we're going to all be thrown in prison or whatever, I just don't buy it. And I'm not going to vote just based on some kind of pathetic fear, like, you know, save me, Republicans. I know you're screwing over the whole country, that your ideals and are just ultimately stupid, that most every Republican candidate is just a contemptible douche. But save me from the evil Democrats. That's just like, honestly, I'm not a child and I'm not a woman, so I don't vote that way. You know?
Okay. I guess that's my cue to jump back in. I don't know.
Well, I just wanted to say that because of all that LGBT talk. I'm not a woman.
Okay. I don't know what the choice we're going to have in November is. It depends on, well, there could be a third party run by somebody, and there we don't know who's going to be the Democratic nominee. One thing about Biden, I've seen him run before in 88 and in 2008, and Biden has foot and mouth disease, and it's terminal. I predicted a while back that he wouldn't win a single delegate because he's never won a single delegate before. Well, maybe I'll be proven wrong, but
His support is remarkably stable.
And there's a reason for that. The reason his support is so firm is because it is support among people who don't follow politics, and he's just a placeholder, right? Basically, he's a placeholder. Once he gets more scrutiny, because the thing is, he can make these gaffes and it doesn't hurt his poll numbers, because the people who are saying they vote for Biden, well, they just know Biden's name and they don't know these other people's names. They don't know. They've never heard of Klobuchar or anybody else. So they Buttigieg. They've never heard of these people. So Biden's just, you know, he's on the list. And so they'll say Biden. I don't think there's any firm support for him, and it's going to evaporate as soon as he comes under scrutiny, and he's under more scrutiny in the early states. And right, you know, I mean, right now they got Buttigieg in first place in Iowa. But whatever, we'll see. We'll see about that. And if it's Trump versus most of these Democrats, I would think I'd probably wind up voting for Trump. And the one thing about Trump is, as hopeless as he is as a leader, he has led to an environment of chaos, right? And I'll use a sports ball metaphor. If you need that Hail Mary, or you need that last
yeah, we already did it, and the game's now over.
Yeah, if you need that last second thing, you know, you want chaos on the field. You want complete chaos on the field, and because it creates a lot of openings. And I think
this is just living in 2016, Patrick. I mean, we threw the Hail Mary pass and the game is now over. Trump is actually not creating chaos. He's creating remarkable stability.
No, I think there's complete chaos. When you look at the
polarization, that's been brewing for 20 years.
Impeachment. This impeachment, they impeach him, but then they don't send it to the Senate for a trial. So many things are unprecedented. And you know, look at all the kvetching in our Jewish friends in their various tribal circles. There's so much going on that's unprecedented, and probably the exact same things, the exact same results might happen from a Democratic administration. You'd probably still have mass immigration. You'd probably still have mass deplatforming, but it would be in a atmosphere of normalcy as opposed to the chaos. And I think the chaos is better than nothing. I guess I'll pass it on to Jason if Jason has some questions or comments.
Well, and I'll let Richard speak to anything that you just said that he might want to speak to. But then I would like to hear, I'll just throw it out for you, brother. Nick Fuentes, Groypers, pluses, minuses, dangers. What do you anticipate from that group? And please.
I actually addressed this, I guess, a little bit tangentially earlier, in the sense that I think there will be a real movement to create a neo-alt-right. And someone like Fuentes is the perfect leader of this thing. He's kind of like a fish. You can't, you know, you pull him out of the water, you can't really get your hands on him. He'll say he'll like revise the Holocaust and then claim that he was just joking, and then claim that he's, I'm actually Mexican and I'm not a white nationalist. I denounce Richard Spencer. But then, you know, he'll go on his show and basically like clearly play to an audience of white nationalists. I mean, it's just, I find him utterly contemptible. I mean, I truly despise that whole thing. But I do think that it will have legs because Republicans need this kind of stuff. This is the kind of new era of race baiting. And again, these people, whatever they did, like, you know, Yang Gang or whatever, that was like a little passing fad. They're Republican voters at the end of the day. They're never going to get off the Trump train. I mean, let's just be honest. So it's a much more controllable, much stupider, less idealistic, just movement for 4chan incels, like trad incels, I should say. Look, it's a big problem. We're not going to win with losers. And it's just, I don't know. It just, the whole thing just makes me want to take a bath. Look, Charlie Kirk has celebrated New Year's with Donald Trump. So I don't think they've had much of an effect. TPUSA is raising money off the Grapers, putting out meme videos of them BTFOing them. So I just don't buy any of this stuff. It's just not anything that I would conceivably want to be a part of. That's kind of my view of a lot of the movement right now. And we need to attract, we're going to, if we attract fewer people, but people of higher quality, and to be blunt, people of higher wealth, that is a much better thing than attracting a million new shit posters. And it just is what it is. It's not fair, but life's not fair. History's not fair. And that's what we need to be doing. And so, again, we need to just take a step back from this kind of electoral chaos and playing these little games. We tried this. It was a lot of fun. And we should actually learn from our experience as opposed to rehearsing our experience, which it seems to be what the movement wants to do right now.
So sorry, Patrick, that was just the one thing that I thought you put your finger on, actually, that I was interested in hearing. And that is this flippant lack of seriousness, wisecracking, you know, always, you know, moving forward and then drawing back, saying, oh, it's just a joke. What did they used to say back in the day? Psych. It was a psych, you know, wasn't psych, that,
yes.
Wasn't that the term?
So we said in the 90s, you and I. Gen it Xers, was psych, yes.
Yeah. So I just...
I support the white race. Psych. You know, that's basically what... It's like the irony bros was that I think they still exist to some extent. It's just these weird kind of botched human beings... who are in the movement yet kind of like generating chaos. Weave is an excellent example of this. Andrew Englund. You can't do things with just these botched, toxic people. And it's very hard to step away from the movement because the fact that we're talking about it means that we're kind of in it, but you just have to at some point. Like you, there's nothing can be done with ironic phonies.
Right. And so that's really what I was asking was the lack of the flippancy and you know, the lack of seriousness. How is that clearly you're saying weakness. Is there any element that is a strength?
I think humor can be a strength. I mean, look, I've always.
So satire as opposed to being flippant.
Well, I mean, look, it's, you know, I guess it's a matter of degrees. I mean, look, whenever I go on these shows or whenever I do, even when I write a kind of serious article, I try to add a little bit of humor, put my, you know, tongue in the cheek a little bit on some things. I think that's good in the sense that we aren't just this, you know, it's all bad news. Our people are dying. You know, we need to be happy warriors. I think that we need to have a general optimistic standpoint, but I don't think that's the attitude or worldview of the irony bros or grapers or whatever. I mean, they are nasty, hateful people. But what I guess is that, you know, when I would give interviews and, you know, these media bonanzas that I did, do you think any journalist thought I was joking? They thought that, oh, he doesn't actually mean any of those things. No, I would tell a joke here and there. I would have a little fun. But what made it interesting was the fact that I'm deadly serious and that I never back down. I would just simply double down and basically give them something even more radical or kind of mind-blowing. And again, this isn't a strategy so much as it's how I operate in life. I mean, it's just me. But this whole kind of, you know, slipperiness. I no serious person going to join that. The people who like it are the people who liked the alt-right in 2016. It's Milo. It's Bannon. It's all these just awful figures who basically want to look at this ironic movement as something that's going to kind of generate energy for a short period, and then they will dump it. The second that it is not useful, they will dump it because they don't want what we want. They want to elect Republicans. That is what they want. We don't want that. I don't care about these parties. These parties can be useful. They can be useless. But that is what they want. And so they will use this movement and then they will dump it. And then that movement of ironic shit posting 4chan fans will turn on each other. It exactly the same thing that happened, believe it or not, the same thing that happened last time will happen again because no lessons have been learned. So many things have been forgotten. I've seen this movie and I don't want to watch it again. And it's going to be really hard to go in a new direction. And I don't even, you know, I think I do have a general idea of where to go, but I don't, you know, I don't have an immediate step for us to go, but we need to at least recognize that we need to head in a different direction. The direction that we ultimately need to be headed in is a real political party that puts forward ideas and agendas and doesn't put forward irony or trolling. And that is serious and that goes before the world and says, I want to rule. We do not want to red pill people, like red pilling the normie. This is just it's never going to happen. It's not even worth doing. We don't want freedom or free association. We want to rule. That is all we should ever talk about, all that we are ever about. We want to be in power. That is all that matters. That matters more than truth itself, to be frank. So that is where we need to go. And it's just, I mean, we can play these games for another decade or whatever, fine. But at the end of the day, someone needs to take up that charge.
Can I jump in for a second?
Sure.
So, you know, we need to rule. Well, you know, who's we and what's ruling? I don't know. I think for that to happen or for something.
Why are we doing this?
For anything decent to happen, you have to have the ground has to be properly tilled. I do think,
no.
I mean, the most important thing we have a society right now, and Tucker Carlson can talk about it around the edges. Other people talk about it around the edges, but we're ruled by a hostile elite. And few of us know what's going on. The vast majority of the people can't tell. Now, if that hostile elite was Chinese, we'd all know about it, which is why I say I'd rather be ruled by Chinamen than by Jews, frankly. And, you know, there's in the chaos, for instance, in the impeachment, we had Rick Wiles, who I'd never heard of before, but he has a large internet presence. He's a Christian minister, traditional Christian minister. And he started talking about a Jew coup. And he's got hundreds of thousands of people who listen to him. And I think that's an important development. The Groypers.
Is it?
No, the Groypers. I mean, I don't expect.
You really want to be associated with goofball religious fanatics?
It's not a matter of being associated. It's Rick Wiles has his role. He has his job. And he talks to his people. Those aren't the people that are going to listen to me. But I think that's been a very positive development. I don't expect to be led by a 21 or 22 year old guy, Nick Fuentes, but he's got a lot of people who have been listening to him over the years, I guess, very young people. And I think it's a very positive development that he's got them going to, you know, establishment Republican events and having them ask questions about, you know, immigration, about Israel. I think that's a positive development. I don't expect this guy to become our leader, but I've always said
that there were positive aspects to the Groypers. I mean, I'm not against pushing back at Q&A sessions, and I think certainly not all of the questions, but a lot of them were good, and some of them were even quite good. So that is fine. But it's just, you have to understand what all this stuff, the toxicity that surrounds all of this stuff. I think it's kind of, I don't know. I've been back and forth of whether the Groypers are overall kind of good or overall bad. I'm probably on the side of bad with these lunatic Christian ministers. I mean, this is not new, Patrick. I mean, I think I've just about heard.
It's my show. I want to speak.
Okay,
that's it. Look, firstly, it's all well and good saying that you want to rule, but that seems to me like a very kind of like childish knee-jerk thing to say. Obviously, power is what we need, and we need power so we can shape society in the way we want. But to say, oh, we want to rule, but we don't want to red pill people, and we don't want to prepare the ground, that is very naive, because people who rule, rule because first they have won people over, and secondly, they have built the people they've won over into a power-winning community. You don't just stand up and say, I want to rule and take it over. And secondly,
did the left red pill
public? Wait. Secondly, the other thing that's very important is the Republican Party, centrally, are a complete menace, okay? And Trump has completely sold out the people who voted for him. And he has been sort of more of a Zionophile than probably any other president. And I think that his policy is one of Israel first rather than America first. And on that thing, I take my hat off to the Groypers for challenging that. And what you've got to remember, though, Richard, is despite Trump selling out, despite the Republican Party and Charlie Kirk and all these people being against us, the rank and file Republican people are far more amenable to what we believe than the rank and file Democrats. Now, rank and file Democrats are like rank and file Corbyn supporters. They're people who cheer when a black, Asian minority, ethnic manifesto is brought out. They're people who want to put everyone's pronouns in front of their names every time they speak. They're people who want LGBT rights. They're people who want this nonsense in libraries like Drag Queen Story Hour.
We're getting now, that anyway.
Our brand of politics isn't going to appeal to those people. So by jumping onto the Democrat train, you're only going to confuse normal people. You're not going to achieve much, if anything. You need, and so do all of your supporters, to get on the fringes of the Republican Party, go to Republican Party events, and pull away as many people who are curious about demographics, about race, about migration, about the Israel issue, and pull them into a genuine power-winning community movement that you control, and then set about taking power. By going into the Democrats or going on their fringes, you're not going to win over any of their fringes to your cause. You're going to waste your time. And I think what you're doing is more of a knee-jerk reaction. Yes, Trump has failed us, but that doesn't mean that the entire Trump project was defunct, right? President Trump has been a failure, but campaigning Trump was fantastic. Campaigning Trump got people talking openly about demographics. He branded the media as the enemy. He got people away from the mainstream media. He polarized society, which is something that any radical group needs in order to grow. And he continues to do those things to a degree. He's not our guy, but we should still be using him for whatever we can in order to build a radical movement. And that radical movement will emerge from disaffected Republicans, not disaffected Democrats. That's my point.
I said that I am going to vote for someone because in my own little 1/300,000,000th slice of the Democratic pie, I want to immediately help people on a short-term basis. That's all I've said. I'm not attending Democratic gatherings. I might actually go to a Tulsi speech here and there. Who knows? I would just do that as an individual to hear what she has to say. Maybe ask her an important question. But I don't. You're kind of strawmanning me in what I'm doing. I mean, I generally agree that disaffected Republicans would form a power base. But we need to build something that can articulate that energy. And if we're just, I don't know, hanging out, talking about the failures of Republicans, this has been going on for decades. We've been doing this.
No, I didn't say that.
Not really leading anywhere.
I didn't say that. I said, speak to people. Look, Nick Fuentes is not my best friend, but he has got a good tactic in one way. His good tactic is going to places where people naturally are concerned about demographics and pulling them over to him. Now, my issue with Nick Fuentes is he isn't building a viable movement out of the people he pulls over to him. You, however, are a much more mature man, and much more mature men have a greater energy when it comes to creating viable, stable movements. And if you attempted something like he has done, the people you would pull over would be people more of your own age, who are people who would be businessmen, they will be stakeholders in society. They are the people who can build stable communities and political power.
I don't disagree. But let's remember what has happened to Nick Fuentes, in the sense that he has gone to some kind of basic Republican gatherings. The people who have invited him have been immediately fired. He's been banned from attending conservative events where the security has basically been alerted beforehand and they're waiting to stop this. I'm not against talking to these people. But we're going to need to unify our powers and build a real organization that can articulate this. So I don't fully disagree with actually what you're saying. I think we're kind of maybe strawmanning each other a little bit here. I'm to blame as well. But yeah, and look, I even said this. I said this on JF's program maybe a week ago or 2 weeks ago. I mean, look, whatever I want to say about my distaste for the Groypers, they are the movement, in the sense that they are the ones doing something in the real world, making headlines. And you can talk about this group or forum or podcast is bigger, or this, what it doesn't matter. In terms of, they are perceived as the place where the rubber hits the road. And that is something. I mean, it can be done in a different way. I think that, you know, again, these people are generally absolutely toxic towards me, hostile towards me, and I think they're toxic generally, but I would tip my cap to the fact that they are doing something. Patriot Front is also in their own way doing something. I'm not big on flyers, but whatever. And they're holding rallies, they're criticizing people in power. I mean, that is something. That is where the rubber hits the road. And that is what a movement is. But it's got to be our movement. It has to be, we are in charge. We are the gatekeepers. We are the ones pushing it forward. Just piggybacking on conservatism, it's going to end up like it has already ended up. If someone talks to you, they will be immediately fired. I mean, the antibodies, the immune system of Conservatism Inc. and the GOP is amazing. They will attack you immediately. And the other thing we just have to remember is it's about leading people. It's not really about appealing to people. I mean, and we're going to kind of rub people the wrong way. We are heretics. We are going against, I mean, you can say the lower class agrees with us. And like, if I had a political program with the lower class, with the working class of white people around America and Europe and Australia, would they like it? Yeah, of course they would. But, you know, we have to understand ourselves as actual dissidents. We are in a system that despises us, that sees us as the enemy, and that sees, you know, something like Charlottesville as one of the most horrifying events of their lifetime, precisely because it was a bunch of white people standing up for themselves. And they see a Trump rally, as goofy and stupid as Trump rallies are, with Trump just rambling, talking about flushing toilets and windmills and all this just nonsense. They still view that kind of nonsense as a threat. So we have to understand ourselves as dissidents. We aren't populist in a fundamental way. We might be folkish in the way that the conservative revolution defined that. But we're not actually populist. We're not actually putting forth a kind of fun message that's going to appeal to a lot of people. If, you know, joining our side actually demands sacrifice. It hurts. It will, at least in the short term, harm you. And it's a terribly difficult position we are. No one's getting fired for attending a Black Lives Matter gathering. No one's getting fired for attending a, you know, transsexual story time or whatever. They're getting fired for attending a milquetoast, you know, alt-right gathering. And so we need to recognize the context in which we're in. We are heretical, and Richard, joining us hurts.
But Richard, you keep saying we're not
just
popular.
Does. How can you deny
you
this?
Keep saying, you know, it is difficult for people to join us. But what I'm saying is, and what you're not picking up on, is Trump won because a huge number of the American public, the silent majority, normal white people, have been sat there for years worrying about immigration, demographics, the changing face of America's population. And the fact is, that is a populist point. And the Republicans ignored that populist point because they did ignore it for years.
Romney was accused of being a racist for talking about voluntary deportation. The GOP has been a race baiting party since the late 60s.
No, Mark, it hasn't.
Yes, it has. Oh my God. Okay.
It's been, if you look at Nixon's Southern strategy in 1968, I think Richard Spencer is very accurate. 1968 marked the Republican Party led by Richard Nixon that was trying to take the race issue away from the Southern Democrats and use it. And there was a successful realignment of American politics, a massive realignment of American politics, where these solid South went from Democrat to Republican. But I think that in the ensuing decades, it became more and more dog whistled, and to the point where it was a frequency that hardly anybody was hearing anymore.
Atwater, who I'll have to go back, and he worked for Nixon, worked for Reagan. He actually said it was like at one point you could say N-word, and you'd get people's attention. Now we can't say the N-word. Now we have to talk about busing. We can't even talk about that. So now we talk about tax cuts or whatever. But the GOP, the dynamic is race baiting. It has basically been about you can actually even see this with like explicitly Southern candidates like who was the guy who was shot and ended up in a wheelchair?
George Wallace.
George Wallace, exactly. Yeah, sorry. My old age is getting to me. You can actually even see this with George Wallace, who kind of race baited and kind of denied and kind of that kind of slippery, ironic term. You can see that in his campaign. This is the mode of Republicans is basically to benefit from the anxiety created by demographic change or in the case of the 60s, not so much demographic change, but just African-Americans, and ultimately benefit while doing nothing about it. And when they articulate a message, an ideal, it's basically been one of, you know, my freedom and liberty and all that kind of stuff. Toxic brew. Trump is the last final stage of that in the sense that he does it in a retarded way. But it's not new. It's just the kind of like late last gasp of the George Wallace Southern strategy race baiting that we have seen for decades.
But don't you think
we've
don't
got
you think
to get away from it? Do you think they're you actually going to do something about immigration? These alt-right people or the dissident right or whatever they want to call themselves, if Nikki Haley, I can see her running in 2024 or whatever, and talking about illegal immigration and making some gesture toward reforming the immigration system in a kind of Raise Act way. And the alt-right or dissident right or whatever, they'll go along with it. They'll be like, well, she's not good on this issue. She's not the best, but she's appealing to the white middle class, the silent majority. And it's just, we know how this ends. We've seen it for much more than my entire lifetime.
I just want to ask, don't you think that over these past 4 or 5 decades, that there has been a steady retreat in terms of rhetoric? So there's been dog whistling, but the frequencies of the dog whistles have been changing. And, you know, the Atwater, who died, I think, in 1993,
You gave that quote of his on busing. Now we're talking about busing. Well, of course, Joe Biden even was one of the people talking about busing in 1993, yes. And he's got to apologize for it.
Right.
And you know, so we're talking about even Democrats or Mayor Bloomberg, who helped
Stop and Frisk. Yeah.
Stop and Frisk, which was successful, but now he's got to apologize for it. So there has been steady movement in, and of course, the Republicans are conceding more and more ground, and they're going back and worshiping Martin Luther King and quoting him and trying to wrap themselves in. So there has been some movement, and while the political parties, they're still, I mean, obviously the Republicans are almost exclusively white, and the Democrats are so heavily non-white, so there continues to be this racial element that's kind of right. An successor to the Southern strategy, but it's in form, but any content, any substance, hasn't it been pretty much so watered down to the point of just being nothing anymore? What do you think of that?
Because look, the Republican voting base is still 90% white. Again, there is a major trend. There's two major trends. I actually wrote a piece on this recently. There are two major trends. That is the revival of suburbia in the United States, which is a real big difference from what was happening at the turn of the century, when there was a kind of new urbanism, suburbia was declining, so on, and then the housing bubble and the housing collapse. There's been a massive revival of suburbia, and these suburban whites are actually slowly moving towards the Democratic Party in the sense that they feel like they can kind of split the difference or thread the needle and, you know, they can jump on that demographic wave and be the leadership class of it and kind of make it all work and never be called racist. So that's a major trend. Obviously, it's both. I mean, the GOP has become more, you know, liberal or whatever in a lot of its talking points from even the 1990s or so on. But then we have Trump, who kind of puts into words the dynamic that has been at play for my entire lifetime. So I just think this whole thing, I think that era, the red era of implicitly white, explicitly libertarian or whatever, is coming to an end. That voting coalition is coming to an end. The dynamic at play is coming to an end. And Trump is a part of it. He's a kind of last gasp of a dynamic that was put in play in the mid to late 60s with Richard Nixon being the most prominent figure in it. And what's going to come next? That's what I'm interested in. But I'm not interested in, you know, reviving this strategy that was immediately successful, but has ultimately been just about managing our decline. Excited about the future.
I know what comes next. The super chats. We have to do the super chats, and we have questions for you as well.
Say something up.
We do have some super chats, and we have some questions for you. Now, Entropy is being very unresponsive this evening. So, I'm really sorry about that. I don't know what's wrong with it. We've had issues with it we're having serious issues. And it's not just being unresponsive for me, but it's being unresponsive for viewers. It's quite frustrating, but we'll try and get through the super chats. Jarvis Kruger Witt gave $5 and said, "What are your thoughts about Daryl Kane? And would you be willing to invite him on a podcast? He is running for president. 2024, regular on JF channel and is a great person. I don't have an opinion on him, so I can't answer that. Sorry about that." Lou Duva gave $5. "Happy New Year. Much love to all." This is a question for you, Richard. How would you rank the following babes of color in sexual appeal? Tulsi Gabbard, Ilhan Omar, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, Ash Sarkar, and Condoleezza Rice.
I feel like this is a setup for a Cenk Uygur-esque, you know, clip that
Beware
someone's going to play.
Uygur.
Yeah, yeah. I actually have to say, I like Tulsi's politics, but you know, I actually do kind of like her as a person. She's the kind of person that I would like to, you know, have a drink with and shoot the breeze, the kind of Hawaii surfing, you know, bikini stuff. I don't know. It reminds me of Dr. No or something. I think she is an attractive woman. And I say that in a total, I don't say that in terms of sex appeal. I say that in a completely respectful way. There is just something vigorous about her. Could you imagine any other candidate putting out a workout video or something where she's doing squats and, you know, lifts and step ups or something like that? Well, you know, you can say that that's stupid, but this is kind of the world we live in social media. And there's no other candidate that's as vigorous as she is. She's actually in good health. She's my age. That's great.
She's a martial artist and she gets along with these like Hawaiian martial arts people. Ultimate Fighters. And also, you know, I saw a video of her recently just sitting in the back of her little campaign bus with her husband playing the ukulele and they're singing harmony. And, you know, they just seem like real nice people.
Yeah, I agree. And she has been, in terms of, has Tulsi really ever said something like toxic about the American people being inherently racist or whatever? All I hear from her is in a way kind of naive stuff about how we need to unify as one nation and move forward together. I mean, it you know, if you want to criticize it, it's for her naivete. But I don't think I have ever heard her say something really toxic. And again, she's not winning. She's maintaining a stable low support. So I'm not sure this actually stuff kind of works the Democratic Party. Yeah, but I certainly am not going to criticize her for trying.
I think this is probably going to be a moment that is clipped out, Richard, and used against you in the future. So that was a lighthearted question that's backfired horribly. Terrence Washington gave $3 US and said, Richard, I'm your biggest fan, but if you are asking for fan donations, don't you think you might want to respond when people ask questions on Twitter and search? My question was, what happened to Jefferson?
Jefferson? Is he talking about the president? Or, oh, I think he might be talking about my dog, who actually passed away about 10 years ago. I don't know what he's talking about. What happened to Jefferson?
I don't know what
Jefferson
means.
Lee. That's who he's talking about.
Okay.
Jefferson Lee and Josh Neal have faced extreme attacks from the Groypers. And Josh Neal was actually doxxed by the Groypers and has had to take a step back and get his life stable. And I actually absolutely support him in that. Both of these people have been victims of toxicity, not of Antifa, but of the alt-right. And it's very sad. So they're going to take a step back. But I love those two guys. And there's a reason I was talking with them and so on. So I hope they come back, but we'll see. But it just, you know, again, it's like there's... You get attacked by the system, the establishment. We kind of expect that when most of the attacks are coming from the alt-right itself. That's pretty sad. But that's what it is. I noticed that about in the spring of 2018, where I would look at my Twitter mentions and there would be, you know, a handful of liberals saying the typical stuff, you know, whatever, I'm used to that. And there'd be like 1,000, you know, hateful messages from, you know, members of Identity Europa or the alt-right or Irony Bros or whatever. I'm just like, this movement is so toxic. It's unbelievable. I mean, I can only laugh at some level. I mean, it's just, we just have to, I mean, they're ultimately not good people. So you just kind of move on. But there are just really serious problems with the people in this movement. I hate to say it.
We've got another Johannes D gave £5. Thank you very much. He said, love him or hate him, we need rich assholes like Richard.
I agree.
Another big fan of yours there. Jez gave $10. Richard, are you serious in suggesting that voting for either Republican or Democrat is going to help whites? Time to admit that the whole system is rigged against us and root and branch revolution is needed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure exactly how much I agree with that. I mean, I basically agree that the system is against us. I was simply saying that some real simple paternalistic things like, you know, Medicare for all, et cetera, would be kind of immediately helpful. Perhaps I would actually say probably more immediately helpful than building the wall or all that kind of stuff. To suffering white people in the Midwest, South, that were where I am now in the Pacific Northwest. I think Medicare for all would have a difficult time getting passed, and there would be constitutional issues at play, but I think it would immediately help people. Revolution, I am a revolutionary, no question, but this person is kind of indicating that we should all go, you know, with pitchforks and go do something. I mean, we would simply be crushed. So we need to be radical, be mainstream, be radically mainstream. But we also need to be serious and patient. And so that's how I would respond to that.
Hey, can I jump in just a second?
No, we've got to get through
just a second.
Okay. I promise, Mark, I'll be really quick. I'll do lightning round responses.
Okay. 3 years ago, Richard and I were talking about a national health insurance system. Remember that, Richard?
Yes.
And that was when you were, you know, doing the National Policy Institute. It would have been some good policy. And then Charlottesville happened. And this is one of the casualties of Charlottesville. After Charlottesville, all of this type of work that people were doing just came to a halt. And it's a shame. I just wanted to mention that.
Great. Let's get back to these super chats because we have got something really important that's coming up. PP gave $5 and said, I like a good Swiss melted Swiss cheese and caramelized onions on a burger. Yeah, that's hot stuff. And you can get that at a number of different places. ProScion Lotor gave £5 and said, I've had some good burgers in my time. I love a good Swiss melted Swiss and cheese and mushrooms, roasted mushrooms and caramelized onions on a burger. That is hot stuff.
Yeah, see, this is the kind of stuff you get from the alt-right. This is like a big troll. Like, apparently I'm BTFO'd because I have good taste in burgers and
We're going to get back to the burger. We'll get back to the burger thing at the
but
end.
I'm just like, whenever I receive these criticisms, I'm like, and? like,
yeah,
yes.
I don't really understand this myself. I mean, I also find it funny coming from some of the people it's coming from, considering who they support and that person's history. Cheeky Pop gave $3 and said, this is a nice, hopefully this is a nice one. If it's not, I don't know what the troll's about. Has Richard watched B-Movie yet?
I haven't. I'm sorry. I will watch that with my kids. I promise. Whenever I'm on these shows, that super chat comes up. I think this is a movie worth interpreting.
Okay. Casual Cruising gave $5. Mark and Jason, last year I finally managed to turn my English friend from abstract and lofty CivNet ideas to feasible positive practices aiming for white well-being. Thank you for your videos. Well, thank you very much. F22 Daniel gave $3. Richard, do you know what happened to Nathan D'Amigo? It seems like he's disappeared after Charlottesville.
Yeah, he did disappear. Believe it or not, Nathan D'Amigo actually, I didn't even know this, but someone sent it to me probably 6 or 9 months ago. But he actually denounced the movement and kind of did a apology, and no one really took note of it. But that is on a blog. Jason's looking at me with this shocked expression. That is on a blog. I'll send you a link to it. No one took note of it. He just kind of vanished. I mean, after Charlottesville, I held a press conference that he was standing by my side. And I was basically saying, like, you know, we're moving forward. You know, there was chaos in Charlottesville, but, you know, we're going forward. And he was right there. He was very solid. I think he's just kind of a bit of a weak personality, and he just got blackpilled by people around him, gave over his organization. I noticed a lot of kind of sub rosa hostility towards me over in September and October, which I did not perceive, at least before that. So I just think he was kind of mind fucked by people in the movement and just has left, but I don't
mind
think
hacked
back.
We have to be careful what we say on
mind hacked.
Yeah, I don't yeah, be careful because everything just gets put it straight into
I don't think he'll come back, and I don't really think he should, to be honest.
Okay, that's good. Now, we've got a lot of questions about one or two specific things, and I'm trying to get, I want to ask them all at one time because it's a very important thing. And I want to, I'm just trying to get through the super chats. John Shepherd Smith gave $25. Very generous. Thank you very much. The Thin Red Line gave $10. Happy New Year to all. Spencer, no one gets power without sizable support in the population. Thank you. Mark Cooper gave $50. Just want to say thank you and Happy New Year to everyone. Thank you very much. Very generous donation. Street Soldier UK TRR gave £10 and said, you cucked out, Richard. But he used an abbreviation of Richard as to insult you. So there we go.
How did I cuck out? I'm curious.
I don't know. But now, look, we're going to read a series of questions now, and we're going to talk about this because it needs talking about. There was a video released a few days ago or a week ago by a guy called Johnny Gat that made some serious allegations about people, you and I included, suggesting that we work in some way for the Russian establishment. Now, I straight away want to say I completely deny these ridiculous allegations. All I did was tweet out when Putin said some things that I happen to agree with. You know, right. I tweet out when Boris Johnson says things I happen to agree with. It doesn't mean I agree with Boris Johnson. You know, I tweet out many people who say things that I say, but it doesn't mean I agree with them. But either way, and this has led to quite a few questions being asked. I'm going to read them all, and let's just then discuss the topic openly. Eric Drave gave £14 and said, how is it possible to be an ethno-nationalist and then show support for Putin, who in Russia has banned white nationalism, and Russia has become more Islamified than Britain per capita, and Muslims are not white? That's the first question. The second is, again, from Eric Drave, who gave £14, and he said, great show, by the way. I think Trumpism was an attempt to divide up America, a Russo-Israeli Bolshevik plant to destabilize America for the Zionist and Eurasianist traitor. And finally, Taylor Garza said, despite Richard's support for Vladimir Putin, I'm under the impression that he is a corrupt Eurasian that doesn't care too much for Western civilization. When we take power, he will consider us an enemy. So this is a series of questions about the Russian issue. And there's also something that I was asked to ask you by another content creator. I think it's your ex-wife now. Yes. She used to translate books on behalf of Alexander Dugin, who... Yeah. Does seem to play both sides of the fence in the sense that he plays both the white nationalists and the Antifa types. Now, what is your response to all of this? Because Putin, he does seem to be mouthing one thing for dissidents in the West, but doing quite different things in Russia, such as outlawing people like you and I and throwing people like you and I in jail. What is your take on this? And do you want to comment on the allegations about you being a Russian state plant?
I would be curious to see the evidence for this, that isn't, you know, your ex-wife translated a book. I mean, I don't know even what to say. I mean, I get into international intrigue. So, I'm genuinely curious to see all this evidence for my fact that I work for the Kremlin. I'm a double or triple agent, perhaps. This is all fascinating. My life is more interesting than I imagined. The Russian issue is a serious one. I would say that one of the more radical things that Trump said in 2015 and 2016, perhaps even more radical than build the wall or they've all got to go back and all that kind of stuff, was we want to have good relations with Russia. Ever since the mid-2000s, there has been a concerted attempt to create a neo-Cold War with Russia. And indeed, Russia has supplanted terrorism as the great boogeyman of the Washington establishment. And the fact that Donald Trump was the first attempt to impeach him was on, Russia collusion or whatever. And then the second attempt was he was pushing around Ukraine and therefore kind of supporting Russia. This gets to it. I think the impeachment stuff is a bunch of nonsense, but it all appears in a geopolitical context, which is Russia as the primary enemy. I too want to have good relations with Russia. I don't want this to go on. I don't think this is good for us. Now, is Putin himself pushing the ball forward and going to save Western civilization? I doubt it. I think he comes from a kind of background of maintaining the stability of the Russian state. He certainly does kind of play both sides on things. He said plenty of things that I agree with, plenty of things that I disagree with, or that I'm ambivalent or neutral on. So it's basically the question of what will our relationship be with Russia in terms of foreign policy and so on. And I think Trump's instincts were good. And actually, even reading books like The Art of the Deal, I think Trump actually had good instincts even during the Cold War, radical instincts. And that his willingness to have good relations with Russia is something that cannot be underestimated in terms of the establishment attack on him. I actually think that was more radical than saying build the wall and they've got to go back, because this is where the rubber hits the road in terms of geopolitics, in terms of the military industrial complex, in terms of putting new missile systems and, you know, client states like Poland, etc. This is what it's about, and this does bother people with a tremendous amount of power, the kind of the real deep state. So whether there's always going to be an East-West divide, and that Russia really isn't part of the West, and that we actually are Western in a fundamental way, I think these are interesting philosophical and cultural questions that I won't go into. But in terms of the immediate question of is this neo-Cold War bad for whites? It obviously is, and it's not something I support. Go ahead.
Oh, I think Richard made an extremely important point just now that, you know, the build the wall, the Trump's anti-immigration stance is huge. And that's probably the reason most people voted for him. And there's a lot of animosity from our friends in the tribe because of that. But the reason I voted for Trump was his mumbled positions on Russia, which, while not particularly clear, it was why can't we be friends with him? Why can't we get along with him? I wish Trump was a Putin puppet. I really wish he was. And, you know, I don't know if the Russians have tried to get Mark Collett or Richard Spencer on their payroll. Hey, if they want to get me on the payroll, I'm all here. I'm here. You know, just hire me.
I don't think they're actually that great. I mean, if we look at the
I'm a big Putin fan. I'll just say I'm a big Putin fan.
Yeah.
And if they want me to be their shill, I mean, I'm shilling for free.
You're open, so yeah.
I'm shilling for free.
I'm a bit of a less. I'm not such an outlandish Putin fan as Patrick, but I just think there's reasons to admire him. But yeah, I just think that when I generally look at like the Mueller report or something, I just kind of see the Russians as just kind of stodgy and like lame. You know, it's like, oh, you know, we will spend the $100,000 in Facebook ads. This is, it's just like, get real. The actual communists were like pushing things forward and like taking over other countries and like, you know, creating the left and the new left and all this kind of stuff. I mean, that was, I mean, even if I disagree with it, it was at least, you know, interesting.
And yet this Trump impeachment the current is Kremlin based on just that not little relationship
up
there
to the task of world domination.
Because they're not trying to dominate the world the way the Soviets.
Yeah, but maybe they should. Like, I don't think it's a real like.
I think you have to watch the documentary.
They're not
if you watch the documentary enough. This guy's made, he's put forward some very good points about Vladimir Putin's oppression of anyone that speaks out in Russia against a certain tribe, and his oppression against anyone in Russia who speaks out against. Basically, multiculturalism. Now, look, I'm going to draw a line under that because we do have other questions. We've got one from Jason because he's not had much time tonight. Now, Henry Walker gave $3 and said, Jason, have you found Treadstone? So that was Jason's question. He doesn't have a clue what it is. So moving on quickly, Taylor Garza gave $3 and said, 2019 was the year of hate hoax. An unprecedented number of false hate crimes got national attention to push the anti-white agenda, e.g. the Covington Catholic scandal and the Jussie Smollett debacle. Thank you very much. Men's Rifles gave $3 and said, Richard, is it true that you're marrying an Irish? And then he said something that sounds like octopus.
Octopus?
It starts with octo.
Oh, no. An oct? No. All right, this is just a troll question.
It's another troll question.
I'm going to get married in 2020. I guess I must officially be crazy. And she's an Irish Catholic liberal. So
really?
She's kind of. Yeah.
That's going to end. That'll end well, mate. There's my prediction.
Oh, thanks, Mark. No, this is why it will last. I don't know. I think marrying someone because you agree about intellectual matters, I think is actually bad. There has to be a base of admiration and friendship and dedication that goes beyond this kind of stuff, that goes beyond the polarization that we're living in. So I look forward to it.
Well, I wish you all the luck in the world, but I've got to say, I think that my thing on relationships is once the initial buzz dies away and you sat there, you want to have a lot in common. You don't want to be sat, you know, when all the buzz is gone, arguing over every tiny ideological.
Oh, we don't do that. We don't talk about politics. I talk about politics with you guys. I don't want to. Yeah.
That's a good point. Jarvis Kruger Witz gave $3. And this is a question for us all. And we're going to start with Jason because he hasn't said much tonight. He says, what is your opinion on Nick Fuentes? This question is for everyone. You can go first, Jason.
Muted.
He's muted.
Muted.
It's contagious, Jason.
Thank you. Well, being so close to you, Patrick. Yes, I've had this question before on my on other shows several times about Nick. So I'll just briefly say, I'll just add to that, that he's obviously a very bright, talented guy. He is having a lot of success with the show that he does nightly. I support the folks who are going out there. Some of them, I guess, are calling themselves Groypers. And Nick is, in a way, coordinating this or riding on top of this momentum and then becoming the figurehead of this. And but I also ask those who are, and I ask Nick specifically, that for those who are going to go out and ask these questions, that they be cautioned about the kind of questions that they ask so that they don't ruin their lives in the process. There are plenty of questions that you can ask to reveal anti-whites on the right, particularly the type like Charlie Kirk, without ruining your life in the process. So don't just allow this. And I ask Nick to say this to those who are listening closely to him and obeying essentially what he is saying, to advocate, admonish that they stay away from topics that are going to get them a great laugh and get them a lot of attention on the live streams on Nick's show, and at the same time harm them permanently in getting a job and holding a job, sustaining a job. There are a lot of questions that they can ask that will be productive that won't result in those negative outcomes. So that's what I ask of Nick.
Well, I said what I had to say about him already. I think basically he's positive. One thing I will add to that is I don't think it's good for people like Nick or others to, in order to make themselves seem a little bit more respectable, to throw people like Richard under the bus.
So what do you think, Richard? No, I think this is
fan and frog. I mean, that's their nature. I mean, I'm just used to it. I see the movement is kind of this like circle of denunciations where everyone's trying to, you know, distance themselves. We all get called Hitler or whatever. I just, it's the nature of people. I'm kind of glad to see it because you see who people really are. I don't denounce people. I'm not really in that business. There's a difference between saying, I mean, I've never denounced Nick, even though I don't like what he's doing. There's a difference between saying, I'm going to criticize you. I generally don't like you. That's a very different pose than denouncing people. Denouncing people is about self-righteousness. It's about attempting some useless triangulation and so on. I've not in that business. You've kind of got to murder someone for me to denounce you. I hesitate to say that. That's easy to denounce. But in terms of just people, I mean, I like people who are insightful, who make me rethink things. And those are the people I want to talk to. But this circle of denunciation, oh, I'm really the good one or something. It's just a bunch of nonsense. And again, I remember one of the funniest things from 2018 was Mark and I talking about Faith Goldie. And, you know, it was like I have learned lessons from my experience. I mean, you get these people who jump in to something and they want to talk your talk and they want to get in on that energy, but they're ultimately not serious. And you can see this in them if you don't just get flattered by it all and you really look at them personally, you can see who they are, and they're going to denounce you in 6 months, you know. And Mark and I have criticized people, but I don't remember denouncing anyone. And all these kind of shallow, kind of, you know, short term oriented people, they come into movements, they flatter you, they try to basically steal your audience, and then they'll denounce you in 6 months when times get tough. And it's easy to think that when people are coming to you, it's easy to think like, oh, this is great, more the merrier, this is great. But it's ultimately not more the merrier. We need fewer, more serious people. And we don't need these just kind of shallow, slippery types anymore. It's a short-term high, a long-term detriment to doing anything serious.
Well, thank you for that. I've given a really long take in the past on Nick Fuentes when we had Mike Enoch on. I think his Groiper War's a good thing. I think going to conservative events and pulling people over to our side and humiliating conservatives with facts and logic is a good thing. However, I don't see any positive movement emerging from that, because I don't think that the people doing that are leadership capable people. And I think what will happen is a lot of energy will go in to humiliating conservative ink, so to speak, humiliating, you know, the sort of Trump family to some degree. And then in the run up to the Trump election, all of these people will end up endorsing Trump anyway, jumping on the Trump train. It will have achieved nothing, because if you're gonna go and smash the establishment, you know, if you're gonna go and set fire to the establishment building, you have to have another building ready for the fleeing sort of refugees to come to, so they can take shelter in. And that's how you build your organization. That's how you fill your hall. And unfortunately, that's not happening. And I also thought that his recent
we're in total agreement, by the way.
Yeah. I also thought his recent comments on no women in the movement just sounded like, you know, when you see, you know, these, you know, when little boys are in the playground and they hate girls and they tell the girls to go away and run off screaming because they don't want to be around girls. I kind of got that vibe from it. You know, a mature person would say, look, women are 50% of the population. There are good women in the movement and there are bad women. Like, there are good men and there are bad men. You know, I know many, many wonderful women in this movement who do absolutely fantastic work. Laura Towler, Dionne Moller, Shazia Hobbs, Dancing Dove, Lacey Lynn. I'm not going to list all of them. And if I haven't listed a particular woman, Irish Rose, who was on the other week, Snow Shadow, the lady who does the poetry. What are you going to tell all of these fantastic content creators and wonderful people? They can't be in the movement because because one particular e-girl shilled for donations. Again, it's not productive to a wider movement. It's
coming from these incels. I mean, Nick Fuentes, I couldn't believe that this is true. I thought it was actually fake news, but it's apparently real. But I mean, he was doing some bizarre like life cast with this bizarre gay Australian like cat boy, or you can see images of this. So apparently that's okay. Milo's great to bring into the movement, but attacking women, it's coming from these little incel creatures. And It just, we're, nothing's going to come from this. They adopt trad Catholicism as if they're a priest and they're going to be celibate or something. And women are toxic and all this kind of stuff. Look, women follow strong men, and that's how it goes with life. And all those people, I recently had Laura Towler on my broadcast. I thought she's a great person. So yeah, we can find some good women. The normal women are going to follow strength, and this is a proper dynamic. But just, yeah, like the thought wars or something, it's just coming from incel losers. It's just, that is where it's coming from. It's they're self-described incels. Just, these people are just toxic and useless. You cannot build a mansion on a foundation like that. It's you're building a mansion on a swamp. It's just going to sink into toxicity and hatred and so on. It's just, yeah.
Do you know what? I've got to totally agree with you on that, because I get this anger coming from some men towards women, and that anger comes from a place which isn't a good place. It's a place where these men have failed to get with these women. There's a certain degree of jealousy and anger. And the vast majority of these men who think they deserve a 10 out of 10 woman aren't really living up to the archetype of the man that would get a 10 out of 10 woman. And right. I don't want any of that kind of negativity in our movement here in the UK, because at our sort of first big, you know, organized meeting, we had 100 people there, and about a quarter or just over were women. And I want to foster an environment where these lovely women come along. And in the last couple of days, I've spoken to several wonderful women who are coming to our future events, and they're excited to come. They're excited to get involved. Why would I want to instantly bar 50% of the white population from having anything to do with us? If I had my way, I would have more beautiful women involved, because beautiful women do two things. Firstly, they attract men, and secondly, they actually attract other women. Why do you think beautiful women are on the cover of both men's magazines and women's magazines? They're on the cover of men's magazines because men want them. They're on the cover of women's magazines because women want to emulate them and be like them. And go for it, Patrick.
Can I'm just going to white knight for the incels for just a second.
I was going to kind of do that as well.
I mean, we
I feel sorry for them to a certain degree.
Well, there's so many incels because we have a society, a system that is making women make themselves unattractive, and that's kind of poisoning the women. And then also there's so much anti-white man propaganda. I mean, you've got high schools that are having their choirs sing songs from the Hairspray musical, where they're singing about once you've gone black, you never go back. I mean, it's got, and advertisement industry, like Mark Collins made videos on. So it's a really bad environment, and it shouldn't be like that. And they're not playing on a level playing field.
No,
I disagree with that. You know, what about these fat guys that sit playing Call of Duty for 14 hours a day, or, you know, refuse to have a shave or won't go to the gym? You know, there is problems with men and women. Look at the male soy boys. Look at the men who won't get fit. Look at the men who are too cowardly to say anything and won't even approach a woman, you know, and are sat there with, you know, Cheetos or Wotsits in their soy beard, crying because Taylor Swift won't answer their messages. What about these, you know, there are ASMR girls on YouTube who are quite plain looking women, you know, attractive, but they're not like a 10 out of 10 Russian supermodel or anything. That's my support for the Russians there. Their supermodels are fantastic. But the point being, you know, you have these relatively plain women on YouTube producing ASMR videos, and they're making 15 grand a month from these men who are paying $200 a month to get a private video from a girl they'll never meet. Well, this is my message. If you're one of these angry men that's funding these women, take the money in your hand, go to the gym, get a personal trainer, become Chad, and go and get yourself a woman, and you'll probably be a lot happier, because there's fault on all sides here. And just claiming that, you know, it's all the fault of women, that's simply not true. And I'll tell you another thing. When we did our We Were Never Asked event with Laura Towler, every single woman who said they were going to come and do street activism actually turned up. All the men, they didn't all turn up. All these men who were like, I'm going to come and take back the, you know, I'm going to fight for my people. About half of the men who said they were going to come, you know, got shaky at the last minute. At least when women commit, they actually follow through. You know, and I'm not saying that we want to turn anyone away, but we certainly don't want to turn away 50% of the population. It's madness. And this sort of, it's all women's fault. Well, I see plenty of men who are at fault. And if you see a woman who's at fault, or if you see a man who is at fault, go out there and help them become something better. If you see a woman doing, you know, I make videos about women who do stupid things. I make videos about these feminists, about women who tattoo dead babies on their tummy, who do crazy things. But I also make videos about beta males, about men who sit around in their bedrooms, about men who donate to gamer girls and buy bottles of their bath water. There's failure on all sides. We're a fallen people. We're not, it's not like all of the men look like something out of the 300 Spartans and it's just women that've gone astray. We have lost our way too, men, and we need to find ourselves.
I just want to say I'm not saying it's all women's fault. I was talking about the elite, and we have a cultural elite that wants every white woman to hook up with a black man and wants every white man to hook up with another white man.
I agree. I think there is a context for the incels, and the online pornography is part of a and so on. So yeah, I have a certain degree of sympathy, but at the end of the day, the feminism itself is kind of the ultimate shit test, and you just have to pass it. And if you're not going to pass it, you're going to die out. I mean, our race is going to be different in 50 years. And it was different with this, you know, almost compulsory monogamy, and perhaps not as eugenic as it could have been. In previous ages, elites, aristocrats, high-born people outbred peasants. The people who had names like Spencer, who invaded the United Kingdom, ultimately outbred the population. And there was a downward mobility in which an interesting book called The Sun Also Rises about this, in which elites would actually move down on the social ladder. So a third son of an aristocratic family would become a farmer and all this kind of stuff. This was overall a eugenic thing. I'm not, you know, the incel types, I don't know what to say for them. I mean, I feel sorry for them at some degree, but, you know, is it really going to be a great loss when these people go away? I mean, I'm sorry if this sounds utterly cruel, but we're not all going to survive this system. We're not all going to make it to the promised land. And I think our race will actually be fundamentally different. There's an interesting thing I tweeted out last night, but people with MDs or PhDs are actually at replacement level demographics. Of course, a lot of working class people are at more than replacement, you know, level demographics. It's actually the kind of middling types that don't replace, because, you know, it's like, well, you know, there is a line from Idiocracy, like, how could we have a baby with the market as it is? You know, all this pseudo pragmatic thinking that, you know, these types engage in, or like, women are toxic, they're so terrible, I'll just go watch porn. You know, if you make those kinds of decisions, you're not going to survive. And it's all about passing down your genes. I mean, I don't know what to say. I want to help them. I'm the one who will vote for their free healthcare after all. But that's the benign aspect of me. The more realistic aspect of me is that we're going to be different in the future. And we want to be stronger. We want to be better looking. Women are attracted to hot, badass, arrogant jerks. And that's good.
If you're a hot, badass, arrogant jerk, it's good, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, kind of biased in that direction, but you know, it just is what it is. We want to be a better people. We want to be a more badass people that can conquer again. I'm not really sympathetic for like egalitarianism or equal rights. Or, you know, what was Jordan Peterson because Jordan Peterson was just selling books to a bunch of, you know, incels. You know, compulsory monogamy and all that kind of stuff.
I don't want to get us too far astray, but you use the word conquer. And at this point, are we really looking to conquer? Or are we looking to clean up the mess from our past conquest?
We've got to do the three last super chats. But the one thing I want to say, the one last thing, some people are going, oh my God, but what about the female grifters on the right? The biggest grifter on the right is Tommy Robinson. And the last time I checked, he's a fella.
I warned you about him, Mark, and you were telling people to vote for him, for God's sake, the last time I was here.
I have always tried to be reconciliatory with other nationalists in the UK, and my temper finally snapped when he took all of his donations and produced a documentary called Shalom. Gave another $3 and said, did Richard ever meet Jonathan Bowden? And does he have more film studies with Mark Brahmin coming up?
We did one on Star Wars that we're going to be putting forward. We're going to do more of these. I had the immense pleasure of meeting Jonathan Bowden and getting to know him. I did a number of podcasts, which you can find online that are people actually are listening to them. I'll sometimes go and check my stats and they are still being listened to even though they're now 10 years old. Those are some of the best stuff that I've ever produced. And I actually did have the immense pleasure of meeting him. He was an absolute giant, an eccentric, flawed person, certainly, but an absolute giant, someone who spoke my language. I just remember hearing him give one of his greatest speeches in person, which was criminally not recorded. And just thinking, this man is speaking from my own heart. Everything he said was something that I want to say. It was that I wish I could be that. I could articulate it in such a just striking and energetic way. And then also his ability to discuss something like Marxism and to bring it down to the level at which everyone can understand it, but never dumb it down. To kind of get at the essence, my admiration for Biden is immense. An eccentric, flawed character, but an amazing person.
Okay, can we?
You would agree with all the conquer stuff as well. You guys.
I knew Jonathan Bowden, he was a fantastic guy, but we do have some last super chats and we're running out of time. Norprog Lorenz gave $15. What does Richard think about Norway, her people and history prior to the Christianization and thereafter, prior to the Reformation? No cold takes now.
I love it. I love the Nordic people. I might be a little bit more partial to that kind of synthesis of Nords and Meds that emerged in the ancient world, which you can see in Greek life and the Roman Empire. But I absolutely love Nordic culture and so on. I don't think they've ever, I don't know, they've been Christianized to a degree, but I think that's going away.
Okay, and the final question, well, it's more of a statement. Lucas King gave $3 and he said, how is doing retard rallies, promotion of enslaving Haitians, talking about ending free speech and promoting elitist pan-European imperialism going to win the culture war? Thanks for killing the movement. That's a positive place to end, isn't it? God,
I'm not going to even respond to that kind of stuff. I mean, this is just kind of the typical stuff.
Okay, and we've got a couple more questions. We've got one from JT. It says, Richard, will you be inviting Sargon onto your channel anytime soon? In the debate Sargon did with Vaush, he was asked if he would have another talk with you and said yes, he sees no
reason. Oh, good. I will invite him. I will reach out. I don't know how to get in touch with Sorghum, but I'll refrain from cheap jokes. From Sargon of Akkad. I will reach out to him. I have said this so many times. We don't have to have a debate because we know I'll win, but we can just have a talk. And it will be interesting to kind of get some ideas out there. But I do I don't know. The guy entered the debate I had with him. Kind of, he used a lot of bad faith arguments, but I think overall it was an extremely productive thing because it really did show divisions between the way that I think and the way that people like liberalists think or so on. So I don't know. I've never really been against Sargon. I've never really been his enemy. I say that genuinely. I've criticized him, but I've never really been his enemy. So I would love to have him on. That would be fun.
Okay, well, let's try and work that out. So we are coming up to the end of the show. I think today has been a really, 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 really fantastic show. And I wanted to end on something light, so we've all got something to laugh about. So, Richard, what is your favorite burger and why did you choose that particular combination? Because I'm a very solicitous, I like a nice burger, but I'm the kind of guy that, you know, I'll settle just for a couple of Big Macs, but yours was a very...
Oh, specific. I won't settle. I never settle, Mark. I never settle on anything.
What's your favorite burger, Jason and Patrick?
I don't eat any bread, so I don't have a favorite burger, I'm afraid.
Well, you can put it on lettuce, but you still need some caramelized onions and mushrooms in there. Yeah.
Well, yes, I have not had that before, so I'll have to try that out, and I'll let you all know.
Well, burgers.
We need to eat good stuff.
When I was a kid,
I don't know, this weird kind of burger nationalism of like we eat fast food and because we're so normal. That's just really, really terrible stuff. I mean, we're on this earth for such a short period of time. You need to indulge a little bit. You need to really live life and appreciate things of value. And I even in a small way, like having a good burger.
So I was just going to say, whatever it was, my mom cooked for me when I was a little kid.
Well, that's interesting. Cause your mom is actually making me lunch today. So
God. Right. Well,
yeah, my mom's been dead for a long time, so that would be a feat.
God, I'm sorry.
No, it's no problem.
That was
the most awkward way to end the
show. How old do you think my mom would be?
This was a happy time.
Pat, I sincerely apologize. That was just knew that was a humorous joke. I was just, I apologize for that. That was just trying to have a little fun.
Oh, my God. Well, so thank you so much for being here with us tonight, Richard. I'm obviously we had a lot of viewers. We had over 1900 viewers live on YouTube alone. We've had about 70 or 80 on Entropy. And of course, we're also live on Radio Albion. So we usually get about 400, 500, sometimes 600 viewers there, too. So a great start to the year. Thank you so much for joining us. And yes. Also, thank you for answering questions so candidly. You haven't dodged anything. We've addressed some very difficult issues. We've had a bit of debate. Is there anything you'd like to say in closing comments before we go around the group and finish the show?
No. I am actually going to run because I am going to go skiing. So I don't have anything to say except I want to start off the New Year's right and go spray some powder.
Well, thank you so much. Have a great time skiing, and I hope you enjoy your time with your family, Richard. Thank you so much.
I will.
I hope you'll come back again later in the year.
Of course I will. Just simply ask, and I will be there, Mark.
Well, thank you very much.
I'll talk to you soon, Jason.
Again, thank you for being so honest with your answers. So we'll let you go.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. Well, we lost Patrick. How'd that? Oh, there he is.
There he is. So, Patrick, my friend. After that rather awkward ending there, is there any final thoughts from you, my friend?
Everybody should tune into National Bugle Radio tomorrow because the show that I recorded on Monday with Mark Collett due to RBN scheduling, it's going to be broadcast tomorrow, Thursday. So tune in. That would be 1 p.m. Central, 2 p.m. Eastern time tomorrow at RBN. And you can hear Mark Collett and I talk about, fixing Africa's problems and then moving on to the rest of the world. Good show. So happy New Year, everybody. And go to nationalbugle.com and download the Kosher Certified app. And let's have a non-kosher certified 2020.
Well, Jason, you've been very quiet today, and I'm sorry that you've sort of been cut off and your only question was something that you didn't actually understand. It's been a bit of a Jason-free show, unfortunately. Hopefully we can rectify that soon. But is hopefully there will be shows that are full of Jason, notably the after party. Is there an after party this week? If so, at what time and who are the guests?
I think this week, the after party, Thursday, and I think it's 4 or 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we are going to have the good folks on from White Rabbit Radio. Make sure you don't miss that. We're going to be talking about all things dialectic and lexicon, how we are going to help our folks go free. So it's going to be very exciting. We do also have a Luke Mason's at 4:15 is when I could set it. 4:15 on my channel, the premiere of Luke Mason's third installment of his 10-piece album for White Wellbeing, where he is telling the story of Prometheus Rising. It is a magnificent piece. Make sure you all catch it. You can find the link. I've dropped it in the live chat once, and maybe I'll drop it one more time. You can find me at nowhiteguilt.org as well, at theafterparty.tv, where you can find both Jared and myself. And as it is the first of 2020, I said we would have the Kindle version of Go Free available, and it is available, and it is at a special reduced price of $2.99 for the first 299 downloads. Make sure you get your download so that we all can go free in 2020 and make a big difference this coming decade. So happy new year, happy decade to you all. It's been a great pleasure, and I pass it back to our leader, Mark Collette.
Well, thank you, Jason. Thank you, Patrick. It's been a really good show. I think it's been very sort of fast-paced. I hope we cleared up the misunderstanding about the transsexual issue at the beginning. We will be doing a number of different streams and events this year. We are going to try to make 2020 our year. We are already working on the PA manifesto. We are working on, obviously, our first conference of the year, and we have plenty of other things up our sleeve. We have a wonderful lineup of guests coming up on the show in the next couple of months. We have an expert on South Africa and the plight of the white South Africans. We have Dancing Dove coming back on, and we have the wonderful Adam Green scheduled as well. So it is going to be a great January, a great start to the year, and we couldn't have done it all without you guys. And remember, if people need to contact me, you know, I do say things on these shows about, you know, guys needing to man up. And I don't say those things in a vacuum. I don't just throw that out and abandon people. You know, my door is always open. You can always email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. If you are a guy that wants to get into going to the gym, wants to get into running, wants to get into physical fitness, wants to become a better man so he can go out there and find himself a loving, kind and beautiful partner, please contact me and I will help you in any way I can. I never say anything and then leave people to their own devices or to struggle on alone. This is a community and we hope to foster that kind of help, that kind of brotherhood, so that we can involve everyone in the West, men and women alike. Okay, well, that about brings it to the end of the stream. I would like to thank the wonderful Richard Spencer. I'd like to thank Jason, No White Guilt, and the exceptional Dr. Patrick Slattery. I would also like to thank everyone who was very generous and sent donations via Entropy. If you can't donate via Entropy or want to donate via other means, please use Bitcoin or email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And that just leaves me to say thank you to the wonderful chat. I hope you all had a great Christmas and a wonderful new year. It's great to have such record figures again. You know, to start the new year with over 1,900 people watching live on YouTube is superb. I love you all. This is an amazing community, and it's only going to get better. Let's make 2020 our year. I hope you've had a great evening with us, and I hope to see you next week. Enjoy the rest of your week, and stay safe, people.
You're listening to Radio Albion.